One of the most encouraging and pleasant individuals that's talked about in the scripture, and certainly suffered a lot of persecution. It's encouraging to see people that have faced such difficulty and yet seem like they didn't get to a point to where they just threw up their hands and quit. With the exception of the Lord, I think it would be hard to find someone talked about in the scriptures that would pass what this man endured and the way that he endured it. You know, we all encounter things in our lives that are disappointing and not pleasant. I don't know of anyone that spends much time in this world that is not acquainted with a lot of that. But it's how that we act and react to it that makes an awful lot of difference. The scripture said of the Lord that he was tempted in all ways that men are. I think we have to, when we say that, I think we have to kind of make a distinction in being tempted. Sometimes we think of temptation as wanting something that's wrong. And maybe because someone has presented something to us that's not right, but yet it's something we probably want. That was, of course, not the case with the Lord. He was tempted in a sense, but he was never made to want the things that he was tempted with. This 37th chapter, in it, the man is mentioned quite several times through the scriptures, and even at least once in the New Testament writings. We know that if there's any real strength or any real goodness, and we know the origin of it, and we know who gives that to his children on occasion. Jacob had 12 sons, and they held a lot of importance as far as Israel was concerned, as far as the scriptures are concerned. They held a very important place in it. But there's nothing that eats up the peace that God's people have other than that of jealousy. And I'm satisfied that it's probably caused more problem in the churches in our days than almost anything that we can think of. It's a horrible thing, and we're all affected to some degree by it. But I think nowhere in the scripture is, unless you want to talk about the Lord himself, is it demonstrated any more than it is in this family. And this was a family that God done something for that he never done for another family. He named Israel. He named the tribes of Israel. Those names come out of this family, Jacob's children, and was a good family. But jealousy, and you know that usually happens in a family that's real close. Because if they're not real close, it don't matter anyway, does it? But usually if you have children, and it's hard if one child, or if more than one child, is in a position to do things that maybe the others can't or won't. And it's almost always, if it's a large family, that you've got that scenario. And there's two positions that the other members in that family can take. One of them is that they're joyful about it. And they're glad to tell folks, that's my brother, he's a governor, whatever. You know. But at the same time, it just breeds jealousy. And Satan is always there to advance that. And certainly in this family, that was the case. Every one of these children had things beyond measure to be thankful for. God had done something to their father, to their grandfather, and to them, and their children after them, that was seldom did God work within a family with such greatness and it be known and be a matter of record. He begins this chapter. He had got through going through a lot of the genealogies of different families, but he comes to it. You know, it's certainly it's no coincidence that the last verse of the chapter before then was somewhat opposite, especially the last verse of that 43rd chapter. I'm sorry, 43rd verse of the 36th chapter. But I don't want to dwell on that, just to make a point. The 37th chapter, we will begin reading a little. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This was a great turning point. Now, Abraham and Isaac had passed through Israel on occasion. The Lord had brought them through that and told them, this is your inheritance, I'm giving it to you. But neither of them had the privilege of living there other than maybe just the short time of passing through. But Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger. Second verse, these are the generations of Jacob. He's going to tell us about his children. And the tribes of Israel, or Jacob as he was called at this point, that's how all the tribes were named after his children. So this is really a family that the Lord had brought in and involved them in the great work that he was doing in this place called Israel. So they all had untold reason to be thankful to God for whatever. If he gave them land on the southern part, the northern part, the eastern, the western, whatever it was, he gave them something that was unique to them, that all of his children in the world did not have that privilege. But they was concerned about one getting more than the other. Jacob loved Joseph more than all his children. Now, I don't think Jacob sat around and lined his boys up and say, now I love this and more than I do all of y'all. I'm sure that it was obvious that he favored him some. But he favored the others a lot. Second verse, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 16 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was the son of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. I'm not really sure what it's talking about, except to just take what the Bible says, that they was up to no good of some kind. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a coat of colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all of his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to them. Notice it didn't say that he didn't love the others, but he loved Joseph, because Joseph came along. If you've had children, we have to know. We kind of hard on the first ones. But as we have other children, we soften up, don't we? And we're more affectionate to them. That's just the way it is. But it was the extreme in this case. And so much so that his brethren, and now these brethren that we're talking about, they're the ones that when God opened up and gave Canaan land to them, that they were these different areas in Canaan were named after these other children. So God didn't dishonor them. There was just an honor to Joseph that was specific to him, and it was more. But when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. That, you know, after all, God had brought them to a place. He's given them a good land. Every one of them a good land. Except Joseph. There wasn't a tribe named Joseph. But Joseph, in his youth, he had these dreams that really pointed down to the fact that Joseph was going to be a conqueror of them. And not only that, but what really got them upset was that Joseph dreamed that all of them were going to be bowing down to him. Now, the rest of it they could kind of tolerate. But they felt like it was almost normal that they would feel that way. We sometimes look at these characters in the scriptures and we think, well, I expect I wouldn't have done that. Well, we wasn't there. We don't know. And Joseph the Lord starts giving him these dreams. And he'd talk about, dreaming this and that he rose up above the rest of them or even conquered them. Well, that didn't set too well. It even got to the point that Jacob, getting tired of hearing this. Because one of them dreams was that daddy's going to be bowing down to me. In the latter part of that 10th verse, the 9th verse, he had told something now that just really, it really put them all on edge. 9th verse, and he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren, and he said, behold, I've dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the stars made obeisance to me. In other words, they worshipped him. There was a horrible thing when people worshiped the sun and the moon and the star, but I tell you, they are a testimony of the Son of God, for he controls them. He made them, he controls them. So even here we have a testimony of a man called Joseph. And what Joseph is dreaming about, it has been accomplished. It's a reality. But they don't understand that yet. And they don't understand that Joseph, that God is putting him forth as a great example in terms of people of the Son of God himself. It really starts out with some good examples pointing to that. Christ come up, and he goes and he speaks of some of the same things in a plainer and more complete language, and some of them said, well, he's an imposter. We know who he is. We know who his daddy is. Well, no, they didn't, but they thought they did. They didn't know near as much about that man that came into Jerusalem in such a special way as they thought they did. And that was the case with Joseph. Such a good picture. Joseph said, my fruit, my sheaf, my fruit, was such that it stood up and it devoured all the rest of them. Till there wasn't nothing left but that. And then his daddy kind of got nervous. In the 10th verse. And he told it. He told him that the sun and the moon and the stars would bow down to him. That's basically what he's saying. Admit to his supremacy. Had not the Lord proved that I can stop the sun at midday? Or I can cause it to be dark day and night, day after day? I can even cause the sun to move back. But you know, a lot of people didn't believe that. I imagine if you had taken the census when Christ was here in body there in Jerusalem, if you'd have taken a census, do y'all believe that I caused the sun to move back? I suppose there wouldn't have been a big show of hands. And you know, they had this book that we're reading out of this morning. They prided themselves in having this and knowing what it meant. I don't know what they thought it meant. And even his father. And it was told to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and my mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" Well, yes, that's exactly what happened. And his brother envied him, but his father observed the saying. You know, Jacob had learned some things in his life, hadn't he? He had seen God do some things that was not in the realm of being ordinary. So Jacob is kind of, he's moving a little bit easy on it. That's a good example. That when something comes up that you and I might think in our minds that surely God's not going to do this or that. But Jacob had learned that God could do some things that was beyond his comprehension. So Jacob he's moving kind of slow in his objection. But you know, the Lord let that rest for a while. The Lord does that sometimes when He brings something to us that's hard for us to receive. Isn't it merciful that He doesn't demand an immediate answer or even response, though He would have the right to? Good example, when the Lord moves on someone's heart and causes them to love the church and maybe that goes on, the Lord tolerates that for quite some time before they finally, or we, join the church. Wouldn't it be tragic if the very first time we had that feeling that He just put it out, well, here it is. If you want it, take it. If you don't, it's gone. Well, you know, we don't even treat our children that way. But we're patient with them. And such a good lesson in this about this man called Joseph. How patient he was. Joseph went to carry his brethren some water. And they were an honorable profession. They were feeding the flock. And he went to search them out, to find them out. And his father had sent him to go check on them. You know, the Lord, when he was here, he said, I didn't come on my own. My Father sent me. And I'm telling you, he was there to search out the flock and see how they were being fed. But there were some that were suspicious of him. Now, if they weren't guilty of something, they wouldn't have been so quick to be fearful of him coming. You know, when the Lord came, you know, the beggars, those that were nothing in the sight of the leaders, they were not afraid of him. But my friend, there were some folks that were afraid of him, and it wasn't what we call godly fear. But they knew enough about the scriptures to know that it was prophesied that one was going to come and tells about what he was going to do when he did. And this one that later came did. He went into the temple, he turned over their money tables, and he took a whip and drove them out of the temple and said, "You've made my Father's house a den of thieves." But Joseph went to check on, and they got nervous. You know, the leaders and a lot of the people in Jerusalem, when the Lord came, when he made himself known, when he come into that town, and so many people knew who he was and rejoiced at his coming. But my friend, there was a lot of them that got nervous when the Lord came, and especially when he came into Jerusalem. Well, let's back up to the 18th. And when they, that is the brethren, who the 12 tribes of Israel were named after, when they saw him afar off, 18th verse, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. Doesn't that sound familiar? Even the Gentiles, when the old king there heard about it, he sent out a decree to kill all the babies under a certain age in his attempt to stop him. And what a fool that he was to think that he could stop that. But his brethren, 19th verse, they said one unto another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh." You know, that's what the Lord, some of them accused him of, among other things. That he come talking to them about his Father's kingdom, and he come to do all these things to set the prisoner, to open up the prisons. And they had no idea what he's talking about, but you know, if truth was known, I expect they'd have put a lot of innocent people in prison, and they wasn't really too happy about the ideas of the natural prisons being opening and turning all them folks loose. See, they had no idea of what he was talking about. And because of their rejection, the Lord closed their eyes where they couldn't understand what he's talking about. So they said, "Come therefore, let us slay him." You know, they thought that was the answer. They thought if we can take this man called Jesus Christ, if we can put him to death, Now, he's gone around here and he's been raising people from the dead. But if we can put him to death, that'll end this business and prove that he's an imposter. But you know, it done just the opposite, didn't it? Let us therefore slay him, cast him into some pit, and we'll say that some evil beast has devoured him, and we'll see what has become of his dreams. You know, that's about the same thing that we're talking about Christ, wasn't it? We'll crucify him, we'll put him in the ground, and let's just see what happens to all this that he's been telling people about, you know, that he had power over life and death, and that though he be slain, that he'll raise again. Let's just see. They really didn't think that he's going to come out of that grave. They thought, now we got him. He's been doing all this magic, healing people and all that stuff, and you know, whatever. But we're going to fix that. And with Joseph, Reuben was the oldest. Reuben kind of felt a responsibility, I think, that maybe the others didn't. He certainly was a lot wiser. When Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of his hand and said, let's not kill him. And Reuben said, and shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands, to deliver him to his father again. You know, in the New Testament, when it talks about Reuben, there's something special about him. You know, there wasn't a tribe named after him. There wasn't a tribe named after Joseph either. Not when they began to divide up and name the tribes originally. And it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph of his coat. A very special coat. But for the present, we'll leave it at that. And they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, no water in it. You know, their intention was that he would die in that pit. Therefore, they wouldn't have blood on their hands. The leaders in Jerusalem, when they wanted to get rid of Christ, guess what they done? They called on their friend, the Gentiles. Their hands are clean, you see. But the guilt was there. But they cast him into a pit, and they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spices and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Now Judah's speaking out. You know, when the Lord came, there was a lot of the leaders in Jerusalem that was not in favor of crucifying him. But you see, you had a group here. They are brothers. They are bound together. So he said, come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let now our hand be upon him. For he is our brother, and our flesh. And his brethren were content. You see, they wasn't cutting him any slack, but they was kind of shifting the blame over to someone else. Then there passed by Midianite merchantmen. And they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelite. They couldn't get rid of him. They throw him in a pit. Somebody brings him out and takes him and sells it to him. For 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. You know, the Lord had a reserve spot in Egypt for him already. Now, regardless of who done what, Joseph is going to wind up in Egypt. And normally that would be the one place that one of the children of Jacob would not want to be. But under the circumstances, it was a perfect place for him to be. So they return. And they're so cunning and deceptive. Now this is the folks that the tribes of Israel were named after. They had a block of land in Israel that was given them. They're fixing to lose it. So they fix up the coat. They killed a goat. They took his blood and put it all over Joseph's coat that represented a lot of things. One thing it represented is all the colors. But they carried it to Jacob and give him this story about some wild beast. And Jacob believed it. Isn't it strange how that God's people can believe things that are extreme with almost no evidence? It's strange that they could bring his coat that was covered with blood, but they didn't have the body. People kind of believe what they want to, don't they? But Jacob was terribly upset. Jacob was in bad shape that day. And something that I think the Lord does some things sometimes sort of get our attention. The 38th chapter, this following chapter, has absolutely nothing to do with what we've been reading about. But in the 39th chapter, it picks up right where it left off. I call it, I like to call it the interruption chapter. Just my foolishness. But it's put there. And I don't know why that it's placed in that particular place. Just add that to the things I don't know. But in the 39th chapter, it immediately takes up right where the other chapter ended. So Joseph was brought down into Egypt. By those Ishmaelites. You know, the Lord, He uses different people. He uses whoever He wants to. And here, these Ishmaelites were actively employed in something that was going to be one of the greatest operations that God ever used with man, with the exception of Jesus Christ. For He's moving Joseph down into Egypt now. And Joseph is going to go, maybe he will go there as a prisoner. But it won't be long until Joseph is in control of Egypt. I know another that's in control of Egypt. Joseph, just to move along and save a little time, and I'm almost out of time. Joseph goes down into Egypt. He goes as a prisoner. One of the first things that happens is he is accused of a false. So, guess what? Back in the jailhouse. Joseph knows something about being a prisoner. He knows something about being rejected by his own. He knows something about not being protected by people around him, including family. We find that Joseph makes himself known to his father and to the ones that sold him. Isn't it strange that they didn't even know? Now, a lot of times pass and a lot of things have happened, but when they go down to Egypt because they'd run out of food, so the very place that they thought was a horrible place that they were casting Joseph to, Joseph goes down and he is brought into a position to where he turns out to feed them. You know, it's a marvelous thing how God works. And the very ones, my friend, that persecuted the Lord, it was for them that He suffered those things to happen. In fact, He looks down upon them, His false accusers who were cursing and blaspheming, and said, "Lord, have mercy on them. Forgive them. Forgive them." You know, if it had been some of us hanging there and had been treated that way, I suppose if we'd had a prayer, it would have been, "Lord, get me off this tree." But He said, "Lord, forgive them, because they don't know what they're doing." You see, the 12 patriarchs that were selling Joseph, they didn't realize it. But God's taking Joseph and He's going to move him down to Egypt, and He's going to make such a next to the king. and when they're starving to death in Israel because of the famine, and guess what brought the famine? So then they got to pack up and they got to go down there and beg bread. But you know, Joseph was so kind, he didn't come out and say, look, you didn't want to have anything to do with me, you wanted to get rid of me, and now you come down here wanting me to feed you? No, that wasn't what he done. He said, he was so kind, I'm not going to just, when they come down here, I'm not just going to stand up and say, okay, boys, I'm the one you want to get rid of. Now, what are you doing down here? But he didn't even let them know who he was to start with. Isn't that kind of like the Lord works? That though we have offended him countless times, and yet every time, my friend, that he grants us an audience with him, be it private or public, far beyond anything that we deserve. So if the Lord is in Egypt, it's okay to go there. Break no laws. If he's in Russia and you have the chance to go there, you break no law. Maybe a man's law, but that's not so bad. Jacob had said, I'll go to my grave in sorrow because I won't see Joseph again. But Jacob didn't know everything, did he? If we might go to the Judges, the sixth chapter of Judges, and I'll hurry, make a point or two maybe. Sixth chapter of Judges. We find the children of Israel. Did evil again in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them dens, which were in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was when Israel, this is the sixth chapter of Judges, so it was when Israel had sown, the Midianites would come, and the Amalekites, and the children of the east, and they would come and encamp against them, and they destroyed their crops, basically is what it's saying. Israel would plant and have a bountiful harvest, and before they could harvest it, here come their old friends. And what they didn't take, they destroyed. In the sixth verse, and Israel was greatly impoverished. They were made poor because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And it came to pass when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet. And he reminded them, I brought you up out of Egypt from the house of bondage, delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and the hand of all that oppressed you, and drove them from before you and gave you this land. And he goes on in the 11th verse. And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under the oak, which was Ophrah, that pertained to Joash, and his son Gideon, threshing wheat by the floor to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him, and the Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? You know, that's if we get in bad circumstance, sometimes we want to question why. That's not a new affliction. You know, one of the great examples in the scriptures is that of Job. Why has this happened to me? I've done all this, this that's right and good, and why is all this befallen me? He even questioned, why did you bring us out of Egypt? You know, that's the children of Israel made that cry not long after he had brought them out, and they were in the way to Canaan, to that possession, and in the way it got difficult for them, and they said, I wish to God we'd have stayed in Egypt when it was all good for us. But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hand of Midianites. You know, them old Midianites, they just never do go away, do they? And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? You know, the Lord could take this young man and tell him, I'm going to send you now into the armies of the people that's against Israel, that's persecuting them, that has all during history has been trouble to them in person, but I'm going to send you into them and you're going to deliver. In the 16th verse, and the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. One more, and then I promise you I'll close. He gives us some history in that 7th chapter of Acts. Stephen is kind of rehearsing some of these things that he might make the New Testament church aware of these things, because there will always be a Midianite. And you and I may escape him the greater part of our life, but somewhere along our lifetime, we will most likely encounter the Midianites. And that's why that God has inspired the writer to put down this in the New Testament, that we don't get the idea of just thinking, well, this is an Old Testament thing that happened for our entertainment. He gives us some lineage here in that 7th chapter, and I'll begin with the 8th verse and read a little. Speaking of after he had brought them out of their bondage in Egypt. And he gave, 8th verse, 7th chapter. And he gave them the covenant of circumcision. Notice he didn't call it a commandment, though it was, but it was a covenant. And so Abraham begot Isaac and circumcised him on the eighth day. Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs that we've been talking about. And the patriarchs moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God delivered him, was with him and delivered him out of all his affliction, and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he made him governor over all Egypt and all of his house. Now there came a dearth over the land of Egypt and Canaan, and great affliction, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first, and at the second time, Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known to Pharaoh. Then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him, and all of his kindred, 70 So Jacob went down into Egypt and died, he and our fathers. Isn't it sad that we are not more inclined to acknowledge him when we are in trouble than we are when things are well with us? And that's been true all along. But it wasn't long. He's reciting here the things that Israel went through, because his people grew and multiplied in Egypt when they were down there. And it says, till another king arose which knew not Joseph. You know the story. At that time, they were troubled so until they made their exit from that country of slavery and oppression. There has, in mine and your day, that another king has risen. But it's not a bad one. It's not one that would build a bunch of prisons. But it's one that gives us liberty and frees us. I'm really thankful. I enjoy reading about Joseph. It's good reading, you know, and it doesn't water things down, good or bad. But there's so many things in mine and your heart that ought to be able to make some connection as to what happens is happening, both the good and the bad. It's good reading. If you have time, want to read something good, read about Joseph, because he's a picture of the Lord. And the Lord is very good at drawing pictures. May the Lord bless you, and thank you for your patience.